What's going on, everyone? This is my interview with Joe Hamilton, a famous artist and early blockchain pioneer who was one of the very first artists to put his work on Bitcoin back in 2014. We get into all the details about it because it was really interesting to me to talk about it. His work, how he got it on there, working with Kevin McCoy, who you probably know from Quantum, pretty much considered the first NFT on the blockchain. And so it's just good to hear the whole story, and we really dig into it. Really appreciate Joe and his time, and I think you're going to really like this podcast with Joe Hamilton. So tell me a little bit about yourself and your work. Like, how did you become an artist? And give me a little bit of the backstory for somebody who doesn't know your story.
Yeah, well, I went through art school, and I became kind of really focused on my practice. But after leaving art school, I kind of got sucked into the more commercial arts, and just to kind of, it enabled me to travel and kind of do some other things. But I ended up coming back to my practice, and at that time I had to kind of rediscover what was interesting for me. And at that time, the internet was kind of really starting to show itself in the kind of wider world. And I think that just became a real interest of mine. And I went back to study to do my master's. So I found it was really interesting online that public space was something that I found was interesting. So I studied art in public space, which I found was a really great angle. But in the end, there wasn't a lot of there weren't a lot of other people that were kind of resonating with those ideas. And I found that ended up finding that community online. So that's really like the kind of starting point where I launched into all this online work and video work in a short form.
Now, when you say online, was this in like chat rooms, or what kind of year was this? And what were you like when you found people online? What was it back then?
So for me, it was around 2010. I think that was the kind of starting point. And it was the what's known as the post-internet movement, or became known as that. A lot of it was around Tumblr, and then kind of slightly later, a lot of Facebook actually. And Facebook kind of had a bit of a different feel back then. It kind of had that earlier wave feel. And then that Facebook kind of became quite a problematic platform, or I'm sure it was then as well, but more so and more so. Anyway, that kind of whole era petered out to a certain extent. And but I think that was a really interesting kind of moment for me. And I think the artists from that time kind of diverged into different areas. So it's interesting now. I think there's like this is kind of reflective of that enthusiasm around like a movement within the internet. And it's really exciting to see, because there was kind of a lull in between.
Yeah. Tell me about that, because I do feel, obviously, we definitely feel that now. So, because I wasn't aware of what took place on Facebook or Tumblr back in 2010 to whatever, 13 or 14. Tell me about that. Was it mainly artists talking with artists, or it was artists talking with a mix of artists and fans? Or tell me what was actually going on, like in those, I'm assuming like Facebook groups and stuff like that.
Yeah, it was a very internally focused community with mainly artists. So that's a really key difference now, that it's really the community and the audience that's like leading the movement. And then obviously like artists being a huge part of that, but there's a lot of back and forth. Whereas for us, I think we found that there wasn't a lot of response from the wider society in a way. Like it slowly kind of picked up, and there were certain works that really broke through. But most of the kind of most of it was happening kind of without like this broader audience.
It's interesting. I mean, I do see a lot of the similarities to that in today's NFT kind of hype and craze and growth. Because I do see, for example, if you go on Clubhouse, there are artists, you'll go in rooms with, you know, NFT artists. And it's just a lot of artists talking to each other and kind of talking about what they're doing and how to market, how to get, you know, people to buy their art and how to get collectors and all this sort of stuff. So you do see a lot of that still, although on Twitter, you definitely get more of the collectors, right? The people who are buying the NFTs and stuff. Is that kind of a difference you see, or what do you notice the difference is from today compared to back then on Facebook and Tumblr and that sort of stuff?
Yeah, I think what's similar also with that is back then we were really interested in this kind of array of things that were just about to change society. And it was all like, wow, like, look at this. We're right on the edge of all this changing. And for us, no one was paying attention. So let's explore it. And and then eventually society kind of caught up and all these things did happen. Whereas now I think we're in a similar point. We have this kind of technology and this, and there's so much possibility. So there's that enthusiasm there. But yeah, what is different? The other element that is different is that there's the financial, the monetary side, which was never really a thing. And I think that really lights a fire under it and kind of supercharges it. And it's really exciting because that was always a concern and a constant kind of conversation of how could we have a sustainable practice. And, I couldn't quite, keep the momentum that I had when I was younger because there wasn't that kind of support financially. And now it's really exciting to see artists could have that sustaining kind of practice and really contribute to culture and in a long term.
Tell me what you guys were talking about in 2013, 14. What were you guys seeing as the things that were changing in society? Take me back to what you guys were. Do you remember what you were even talking about?
Yeah. Well, I mean, for me, I'll just start with me. Maybe my angle was a little niche, but I was interested in the relationship between landscape and technology. And one example I used to think about is with the modernist artists, they had some examples that their perception of reality had changed through things like the train, because you can move faster over the landscape. And if you can go up in a hot air balloon and look down on the earth, you get a different perspective again. So it's this your agency, what is possible within the landscape kind of changes, your role within landscape changes based on that new perspective and the technology that allows it. So kind of extending that to the thinking of now and back in 10, 15 years ago, for me, it was all of these windows are opening up and it's very screen-based at the moment, but that lag time is getting smaller and smaller. And you still have things like time zone differences, but so many of those barriers are breaking down, and these windows are opening up for us to experience through. So you see that in a lot of my work, that I have windows that look through, and that kind of relationship between the aesthetic of technology with the metal and the kind of straight lines, and then the kind of organic nature of the natural landscape is. So bringing all that together, it was my focus. And then there are other people that kind of maybe overlapped that, but it was quite varied. Some people were really interested in the social networking side, the way that we communicate. Others were more looking at data, or some were building communities, and it was around the relationship between the artists and what they could do. So it's quite varied.
We do see a lot of that today, right? I mean, the talk of community is the talk around NFTs, right? And success is often equated with how quickly an NFT can build or, maintain a community, and if the community's engaged. Is so important for these kind of newer NFT projects, right? It's almost like the defining feature of a quality project is its community building. And it's that's an interesting aspect of it. But for me, what you just mentioned about windows, and I get back because I have this conversation we have quite a bit, is this idea of metaverse in today's society. There's this kind of move to a metaverse or these metaverses that are being built. And I'd love to have your view on it. My personal view is that we're already living in a metaverse, and the metaverse is actually here, right? And so when I interact with my screen like this, that is, like you said, a window to a metaverse, right? And my personal belief, and it, of course it could be wrong, and the future may be more than likely, nobody even understands what's going to happen yet. But my view is that this layering of an augmented reality upon our existing reality is the place that's really going to be the most impactful for a society over the next, 15 years, rather than I put on a headset and I'm transported to a virtual metaverse. It's more like our world just becomes like layered with a digital skin, if you will. What's your kind of feeling on that? Do you get that same feeling, or you think it's going in a different direction?
Yeah, I have a very similar feeling actually to you in that the one thing that I see in the kind of 3D online metaverses that maybe gives it a bit more kind of like possibility to succeed in the long term is the fact that gaming has got so much kind of a huge culture and is growing. It very much has a kind of gaming feel about it. But to me, it kind of like adds an unnecessary like 3D dimension to like what is a flat surface. And I think you're right that like AR offers so much. And I'm really interested to see what's going to happen with AR and NFTs. Like, where like maybe there are some things happening, but the Pokemon Go craze was so huge, and it's surprising that something like that hasn't kind of popped up, and really maybe that's a wave that will happen. But I kind of resist the metaverse like 3D space idea a bit. We explored it a lot like through early exhibitions, like, and we see that happening again, that there are these spaces with works that are kind of distorted in this 3D space. And I think it really impacts the experience of these works that have been made to be viewed on a surface, and the viewer is already in a 3D space. So it's like two 3D spaces, and then It's quite distorted. But I mean, it does create a narrative of like, if you kind of get it engrossed in that experience, that you can probably have that experience of going to another world perhaps. But yeah, I think it's going to get really interesting when it gets overlaid on our real world, like you say. Yeah. There'll be interactions between the digital and the physical, which create a really rich experience that you can't get just with a screen.
I mean, I think actually for artists, it's such a magical time. I'm sure you know many artists as well as I do who've been able to completely change their lives and become, NFT artists. And that's fantastic. And but it's such a small, when I look at what it is, which is this little sliver of NFTs and the small number of people in our society that actually own NFTs, it's almost nobody. And I go, wow, imagine when this is impacted and everybody owns NFTs. Not only, and I think much beyond art, but just talking about specifically art, if my world has a layer of the digital on top of it and I'm wearing glasses and I can experience a layering that I want to experience, so I'm choosing to have this layered experience, I need artists everywhere, because I need artists to put paintings on my walls or to make my walls look different, to make me look different. Literally every aspect of my life that I want to enhance with like artistic flair or just look better or different or whatever, is going to need talent to create that. That's my kind of view. And so I'm like, wow, this is a giant industry where artists in the past had to work for IBM making logos. Now it's like, no, you do, I don't know, you do skins on the outside of houses, right? Or you do, this sort of thing. I just think it's very exciting. Does that make sense to you, or do you think I've lost my mind?
No, that's actually really awesome. And I do like some work within the architecture industry as like a day job. And a lot of that in the past was visualization. So visualization of buildings that are to be built. And it's an interesting overlap because in my personal work, I deal with like a lot of imagery and like found imagery. And like, I'm interested in the like kind of role of imagery and imaging technology. And this idea of like visualizing architecture, I think like at the moment it's below the role of the architect and the actual creation of the building. But I really see this future where any of these image makers really become kind of more important because we will directly interact with these images within our like space, and that they'll be creating the things that we see. It won't be kind of mediated by like actually being physically created. Like it'll be like a live link in a way. So, and this kind of loosely connects, but there are like video games now with modding communities where people can, that aren't involved with the creation of the grand game. One I'm thinking of in particular, Skater XL, skateboarding game. I'm a skateboarder, but it's fascinating that these people that aren't involved, they create these streets and they release them to the community and they gain credit and they have their Patreon page. They basically can sustain a career by creating virtual worlds for people to go and inhabit. So it's very metaverse, I guess. Yep. But that same idea on layered on top of the physical world is where I think it's going to get interesting.
Very interesting. I couldn't be more. It's hard for me to be more bullish than just the NFT space, and I'm actually more bullish about the AR space because I do see how anytime I show somebody who maybe isn't into computers and tech like I am, like my mom who's 80 years old, and I show her, the Google AR Panda on my phone and it's sitting on our couch or something and she goes crazy for it, I think, wow, this connects on a deep level for people. And when you can start thinking about layering just the simplest thing, clothing, right? Where I can have the Gucci, jacket or whatever and layer it on as an NFT or whatever. And it's just there because everybody has the glasses that are made by Facebook or Apple or whoever I wanna, have as my interface. It's just gonna be like this. Apple's now the interface I use to access the metaverse. It may be the same way that I access it through my glasses, right? But this overlay of reality, it's just so exciting. I got a guy who, I don't know, you probably didn't see. Are you in Australia? Is that where you are, or New Zealand? Where are you?
Yeah, I'm in Australia. Yeah.
Australia. Up here at a football, the NFL season, American football just started like a couple weeks ago. And one of the teams did an augmented reality experience. They're the Carolina Panthers. And they did this giant, like if you were at the stadium, there was a panther, as big as a football field on top of the stadium. And it jumped down onto the field and it went rawr. It looked amazing. And the thing had just in the stands, 40,000 people viewed it, on their phones. And you look at that sort of thing, and I'm watching it just on a YouTube video, but it looked so amazing. I mean, just completely amazing. And when you think about it, just anything you're doing in a day to day could be enhanced by experiences like this. And I don't know why I'm going on this tangent, because we're a digital artist and I just think it's cool. And I just love people to hear people's opinions on kind of where they think it's going. But tell
yeah,
me.
No, what... I think, yeah, yeah, I think that's, yeah, I think that opportunity for collective experience is really interesting and we're seeing that. And the other angle is also the opportunity for everyone to experience reality slightly differently as well. And I mean, there's obviously always the kind of downsides of these things as well, like that we could get into, and it's important to kind of recognize, like in terms of, maybe advertising, that's the kind of one of the dystopian things that we've seen in the movies, advertising everywhere, or people kind of in the polars of politics kind of living very different lives,
right?
And like living some kind of this connection becoming a bigger thing or something. But yeah.
Yeah. Where people just
have to tackle those things.
If you can, if you can modify it so that you're only seeing what you only want to see or whatever, it's kind of this, you get in these rabbit holes. I mean, we see it with social media today, right? If you start liking a certain thing on YouTube or a certain thing on Instagram, that's all that's going to feed you, right? So you fall in these kind of very niche silos, right? And how that could potentially be negative for that. But let's get in, let's shift gears a little bit and tell me how you first heard about blockchain and first started kind of taking your first steps into blockchain.
Yeah, so thinking back, I'm not sure exactly what year it was, but all I know kind of looking back is by 2014, I kind of had an interest in it and I was having conversations about it. So it was, must have been around that time, maybe a little bit earlier, but I think one project I did, I got offered to get paid in Bitcoin, which I look back at my emails just
it was 40,000 Bitcoin and you were like, nah.
Yeah, so you know, everyone like has those moments where you look back and you're like, oh, what could have been? But yeah. I think around then but what was interesting, like, actually no, it was before that, because in 2013 we had a residency here that I curated in Melbourne, and that was like bringing together artists that were working with the internet, and we had a conversation on each day at the end of the day, and one of them was the art market and how like alternative methods of sustaining your practice, like through digital art. And we were talking then about it. I remember like not a lot of people had answers, or like it was still very hard to kind of grasp, but we were like kind of testing like the ideas then. And yeah, then it was this kind of, I think the next year, that was when I met Kevin, and you know, I was lucky enough to kind of through his leadership kind of mint work. And it was an interesting process to go through, but there was kind of not a lot of context, it was quite niche, and I didn't quite capture my full imagination of what it could be at that time. So sure. Then I think, yeah. And then after that, I think it kind of went back for me to the back of my mind a bit. And it was around 2017, I think, that I bought like a bit of Bitcoin, and then from then on it kind of started building a bit for me.
So yeah. Tell me about the experience with Kevin and how that we touched a little bit on it in the Discord, but tell me a little bit about that story, like how you got connected with him and how that kind of went down for you actually minting your first piece on Bitcoin, correct? It was on Bitcoin, right? Not
Neo. Yeah. Yeah, Bitcoin, the counterparty protocol that allowed for that. But I was in Istanbul at the time on a residency. And I was making a new series of works, and I'd been invited to take part in an exhibition that was curated by a team in New York who were sharing an office with Kevin, and that was at the Rhizome space, which is next to the New Museum. So it's an organization concerned with internet-based art, and they connected at that space, and then the curators introduced us. So actually, I didn't really have much direct conversation with Kevin at the time. It was kind of email chain conversation, and just to kind of, I think they were looking for other artists who had work that was kind of appropriate, and I had been discussing like my ideas behind my video work, in that a lot of video work at the time, it was kind of locked away with the idea that we show it in museums, we keep it kind of exclusive and rare, and then we sell it to collectors. And my idea was that the material of digital video, it lends itself to kind of be distributed widely and freely. Like it's too much of an upside to kind of lock it away. So, and then through that, I was kind of looking at alternative ways of monetizing my work. And I would create like these physical framed prints with a USB inside. And then I would try and sell those, and they were kind of representative of the work. And I was discussing that with the curator, and he said, well, actually that's somewhat similar to like this idea of like putting it on the blockchain. And I think that's the connection that we make. So I was exploring the same idea, but without blockchain and not getting any traction. And then I'm like, well, okay. It seems like
the. So you did it on the blockchain. You still didn't get any traction, right? Like that's the way Mo is. Like, yeah. I mean, it's funny when I was speaking to Harm or whatever, and Harm was like, well, you know, I was trying to do very similar to what you're saying. He was doing digital work, and his would be like multi screens with a computer, and so he'd sell it like you're buying something that's complex. So he would create almost complexity in the work itself. So he's selling it to somebody, right? It's very difficult to replicate, right? And then moved it to blockchain. This idea of blockchain and digital scarcity. Like he understood it, he got it, but at the same time, he said like almost no collectors got it. Like he would give them, right? You could buy whatever it was. You could buy the video or the JPEG, right? You'd get the JPEG and you would own that, and then he would offer them, you know, the token or the NFT as well. And everybody, you know, 90% of the people would be like, why would I want that? You know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, Harm was actually in Istanbul on that residency as well. So.
Oh, that's crazy.
Yeah. We had some good conversations. I can't remember if we really like touched on crypto or anything back then, but we definitely talked about our digital practices and connected, which was great. And I've known him over the years. He was very much involved in that community, and I've always loved his work.
That's amazing. That's an amazing coincidence, but then not really a coincidence, right? It's like there's a reason we're talking today, and there's a reason Harm and I talked last week, right? It's like you were in the same circle doing very similar stuff, and you know, were taking the baby steps into this brand new space, right? And it's super interesting. But walk me through the process of, you know, deciding on which piece of art you were going to, you know, mint on the blockchain and how that actually worked. So you were doing it by, he was basically telling you, Kevin was telling you how to do it basically over email. Is that how it worked? And you like, you know, tell me the story.
Yeah. Well, I should be clear that he actually did all the technical side of minting. So maybe it's a bit misleading to say I minted it, but
wait, you didn't build the smart contract? No. No, this one. So thankfully, this was Counterparty. Was a little bit simpler than, you know, minting.
Yeah, well, he was definitely the brains behind it, and so I think that the work was somewhat easy because it was the work that I'd been developing for the exhibition. So it was the video work. It's called Regular Division, and before arriving at the residency, I had traveled to a few other countries. I was interested to create a work that had the windows and the kind of multi-location, like the visual representation of kind of different spaces existing within one frame. Like and this kind of idea of like easily like jumping between locations, like what I was kind of getting at before. So what I did is I traveled to a number of places around the world, and I collected imagery. And the other element of that was that I was kind of moving through like obviously the network of airports, and a term for the body of work was indirect flights. So I was kind of small jumps around, and then kind of based on that, I would like find what kind of elements of the landscape would kind of had a just aesthetic appeal to me, whether it be urban or kind of more natural, and collect that material. and then bring all that together into these compositions where places were overlaid and there were windows and these transitions from place to place. It's part of like the body of work I was kind of exploring in that. And for this video, I was looking at indoor like greenhouse spaces. So I found it interesting because they had the kind of the grid structure over the top. So you had the, and it had that kind of artificial, natural, dual side to it. So I'll stop there. I mean, there's probably more to the work, but, you know, risking rambling, but
yeah. You're like, if you're, you're talking to like to me like I know anything about art, right? And I'm like, what day was it minted on the blockchain?
Yeah, okay.
You know that it's like, you know, I get it, but I'm certainly not any sort of art critique or anything like that. I'm interested definitely, and I think, but we do have people who will listen to this podcast who are deeply interested in that. Because we have serious collectors. I'm more interested in the story of why you were in the space at that time, right? And what made you kind of mint it on Bitcoin? What got you to kind of do that? And it's, you know, it's space in the timeline. I mean, you were really, really early to do something which is obviously it's impacting our world now, and it's finally being recognized as something significant. And you may not have known of what I'm sure you didn't know what you were doing at the time was significant, but I think it is and was significant at the time. So I just want like I want the details, the nitty gritty of like who pushed go, what happened, did it get transferred to your wallet, or how did that go down? Like when he set that up, like, did you guys put it for sale, or he just passed it to you and you've had it ever since, or how did that work?
Yeah, well, he actually held on and still has the private key. So, so that's kind of interesting. But it was very experimental at that time. So Kevin had developed a kind of an approach which he tested out on his own work, which a few months earlier he had minted his own work. And it included like a kind of embedded data structure, JSON kind of structure, which is interesting that it's kind of reflected in the Ethereum contracts in some way now, I believe. But he kind of defined that himself. And his work, though, was on Namecoin. So like my work was one of the, I think it was the first that he had put on.
Okay, so he didn't put one of his own on Bitcoin after he did the Namecoin works, or the.
He may have after mine. I'm not 100% sure, but I think mine was the first one he had put on. So, and if you look at the actual transaction, like in Counterparty, many of the other later NFTs, they come with an image alongside it, and the kind of structure is a bit more refined, and it makes sense to kind of look at it and it's like, oh, this is an artwork. But mine is somewhat cryptic. Like it has like a name to it that's kind of not really appropriate. And you have to kind of look to find the details that, you know, makes kind of like sense out of it. But so that's kind of like, it's just a sign of the times that I think that was early and experimental it then. But kind of going along with that, I posted a tweet to kind of announce that, you know, it was my work, and it was posted on the Monograph, I should say. It was the kind of organization that were with Kevin doing that, although it was like very much Kevin kind of experimenting and like pioneering. It was just really the email communication and a lot of his work, and then he held on to that private key for me. So it was kind of like we didn't really I think he pushed it a bit, he took it to an art fair, and there really wasn't that traction. It would have been maybe a surprise if we had sold it. So I kind of didn't give it a lot of thought.
Yeah, it's funny. what's the plan for it now? I mean, do you have you formalized a plan with what you're going to do with it, or walk me through your thought process on what you're thinking about right now?
Yeah, I was surprised, or I knew about the work, but and I was really became interested in NFTs a little while back and started creating some of my some of new ones, and that was really great. And I always kind of had this older one in the back of my mind, but it wasn't clear how kind of significant the like the older like ones were, and I wasn't even sure kind of I didn't even remember that it was on Bitcoin and like whether that was significant. And it got me thinking, I hadn't been like in touch with Kevin. So Kevin created these QR codes to put on the work. And I actually just pulled up the image and used my phone with the QR code, and it took me to the counterparty a transaction. And I just started investigating, and then it ended up emailing him and found out that he had sold his work. Which is amazing. He sold his with Sotheby's. I had a big kind of discussion with friends who are also into it, and discussed with Kevin, like about which avenue, like we should go down. And I thought like this idea behind, like we always explore the idea of kind of like going outside of the art market, the traditional system, and that this technology could allow for a more independent route, and that really appeals to me. So it's a bit difficult because it's not on Ethereum and there's not the kind of marketplace for it, but I kind of decided that we are exploring some type of private sale first, where we kind of do it ourselves, and like Kevin has been really great in helping with maybe doing that. So We're just kind of going slow at the moment, like don't want to kind of rush it. Look for someone who like really is going to like value the work and the token. So you know, we've got a bit of interest at the moment, and like just having conversations and feeling it out. I'm not in a rush. Like if it doesn't feel right, I'll probably wait for a while. I don't think it's going anywhere, this whole scene. So.
Well, that's the difference between you minting on Bitcoin and Kevin minting on Namecoin, right? So Kevin minting on Namecoin, and this was a big issue with his sale, was that, you know, Namecoin, I look at history with a soft lens, because, you know, Namecoin for the time, it was built to be like kind of DNS, like the URLs, right? The URLs expire and they don't go away. So google.com doesn't go away, but if Google let it expire, somebody else could buy that name. And that's what happened with Namecoin, right? It's like, so Kevin had his NFT there and he didn't renew the NFT. And so it was sitting there and basically somebody claimed it. And so when he'd had that, you know, that Sotheby's sale or Christie's sale or whatever it was, he was actually selling, you know, the Ethereum version of that piece of art. But that piece of art, or that, you know, it gets into this very like, which is the art, you know, is the token the art, or is what the artist says the art is the art? And this is a very interesting question. And there's no easy answer. I'm not saying there's an easy answer, but it definitely raised questions, which fortunately you can avoid because you're on Bitcoin and there's no like expiring on Bitcoin.
Yeah, I totally recognize that. I do think like at that early time that it was such a, I think like Kevin has just done amazing work, and kind of he deserves all that kind of recognition. And, but yeah, I totally think that is tricky. Like, and, but I'm happy that he's kind of, got that work.
He worked through it. I mean, you know.
Yeah. So that's good.
There's no easy solution. I mean, talking with Harm, you know, he had a bunch of work on Bitcoin that he thought until very recently, I believe, that it was basically lost because the service they were using, Ascribe, basically went out of business, and he didn't even think he had the keys to get the work back. That may change because we're talking with people from Ascribe and hopefully can get him those works back, but it creates an interesting scenario, and I'd love to have your viewpoint on this, right? So he minted A on Bitcoin, right? He thought that was lost, so he reminted A on Ethereum, right? If he gets back the one that was on Bitcoin, right, which is the right version? What does he do? Does he transfer the ones that are on Bitcoin to the ones that are on Ethereum? Does he give the collector the right to burn one and keep the other, or keep both? What's your viewpoint on that? As from give me the artist's viewpoint on a very, very complex situation.
Well, I'm glad I don't have to deal with that. It's a tricky one. I don't have a clear. I feel like the more I look into it, I might like change my opinion. But I think there's definitely something very important about the if it's accessible within the native format to kind of keep that as part of the conversation.
So the first one is what you would say is the one that should be. I think that's general agreement among the NFT crowd, is the first one is the one that is the most highly prized. That's the general vibe I get.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because I think, I'm probably not in a position to add much more. I just think, we'll see. It's interesting to follow. I want to see like how that pans out. But you're helping, or you've been talking to Harm about that process.
So the idea is, I mean, Harm's actually still friends with people who worked at Ascribe, because he worked very closely with them. But the idea is that roughly, I mean, I don't know all its details, but basically you can spin up what would be basically an Ascribe server. You can basically build one. And by doing that, you know, Harm still in theory has his like username and password. And that username and password actually generated your private keys to access the Bitcoin wallet, basically. So it involves some technical stuff from a technical standpoint of basically re-spinning up Ascribe. And I have no idea how that would happen, but we have developers and stuff who can make it happen, you know? So that's the idea. And I think it's exciting for Harm. It'll be exciting. There are significant challenges and things he needs to work through. But I think, you know, my feeling is the community of the people in my Discord who are huge collectors of his are actually excited about this. This is actually creates a richer story to the works because it kind of puts Harm in that place, like kind of like you are, where he was an early minter, an early user of Bitcoin for his art and for other artists he worked with, right? And so he was minting them on Bitcoin, and he's now he thought they were lost, so he minted them on Ethereum. But what he does with that and the steps he goes forward, you know, rectifying that situation, you know, one way or the other, just kind of layers another aspect to the story, which I think will be, you know, artists or collectors will treasure, you know, that part of the story. Because from a historical perspective, NFT wise, like this is something, you know, the community had to work through. The collectors had to work through it. The very, very few artists who kind of minted early on Bitcoin and minted on Ethereum, he's going to be one of the few who has to work through this. And so I think it adds a kind of really interesting and fun storyline to his work.
Yeah, there must be quite a few of these stories. And I mean, you've already spoken about Kevin's situation and my token being kind of a bit weird compared to the standards of today. So interested to follow it if he shares that story.
Did you do any other work on Bitcoin, or that was just the one and then you started working on Ethereum?
That was the one. I think you know, it would have been amazing if that at that moment I worked closer with Kevin to actually kind of embed and understand a bit more about the technology. But you know, I had kind of my head full of other things working on this body of work, and it was just, great that he was there and we could make that happen. And I think that kind of set set that kind of first, me on that first step to then later kind of jump into it. But I definitely, like a lot of others, like it kind of but kind of drifted off into the background for a few years before it like came back. So
yeah. Sure. Sure. Now, was it was a one of one, right? It was only one, it was one piece on Bitcoin.
So we actually had planned it as an edition of three, but we only ever minted one. So it was only really like mentioned as an edition one of three. Mm-hmm. And with this kind of distance of time now, we've decided that to release two more now, they would be kind of not significant. And that it kind of goes along with all the other experimental factors of the work. So the token. So the reality is that there's a single token from that time. And we're just going to kind of say that that's the token for that work and stick with that.
Yeah. No, it's great. And honestly, it's very unusual at that time to have done something like that, because when I look back through the different artists, early Bitcoin artists and people who were trying to work on Bitcoin, work with like colored coins and all this sort of stuff, it was always multiples. It was always a lot, right? They were looking at it more as like a photographer might, you know, number a series of images, right? So it's the same image and it's a set of 100. So a lot of the early artists on Bitcoin were doing, you know, multiples. Harm as well. Harm would do multiples. It wasn't just one of one. So I think that makes yours really very interesting and very special. And I think Kevin obviously had a lot to do with that, because obviously, dude was completely visionary and technically, it took a lot. I mean, I know he worked with Anil Dash or whoever, and to like figure out a system. But it couldn't have been easy back then. It couldn't have been easy.
No.
You know.
Yeah, something really in the like the editions or having more than one, and what you're talking kind of relating back to the community aspect. And I think there's this, like, from our perspective back then, like the way to kind of like make your work sustainable is to kind of like bridge the gap between this like online world where we're having the community and making the art, and the art world. And within the art world, there are all these kind of established like ways of doing things. Like you have an edition, often like kind of lower numbers for say a video work. So we were kind of using that model in a way. And we were like with this idea that like the elite collectors might, you know, come down to our level and maybe pick you up and like buy piece. Or I mean, I never like really connected with that, like, you know, kind of stayed more in that kind of like community space. But you know, looking now, it's like, okay, you can actually have there was a lot of talk about it, but it was never reality. Like that audience that's like much more distributed and on many levels, and like this idea that you could have a work with, you know, 200 500 editions and people could feel part of a community and connect with your work. Like, it seems so obvious now, but back then we were like, oh, that's not the model. Like the model is to kind of like make it exclusive, like sell to these like people that don't even relate to in a way. And now it's just like, it's really exciting that, I mean, it's just like sparked that other possibility that you can have almost peers. And like, I mean, I've bought one NFT, Petra Cordright, like Room, which like I've always loved her work, but we never really sold work to each other back then either. So it's kind of, but it's exciting that now I really am like looking forward to getting into it more, but like actually buying some and interacting on that community level. So
it's always amazing how stuff changes, and the way we as humans, I mean, we always think we're right in the moment. Like everybody right now is like, everything's got to be a one of one. And it's, you know, and we get in these mindsets of today's the right time. And the way we're thinking right now is right. But as you look back, like all I see are people who at that moment thought they were doing things the best way. Right. And we look at it back and go, oh, that was crazy. Like, what were you doing? It's just, why would you do that? Right. But it's like, and then, so I wonder, like, well, what are we doing right now then in 5 years we're going to be going, oh my God, that was crazy. Oh, that was insane. What were you thinking? You know what I mean? It puts it in perspective. Looking back and trying to find these old projects, just to give you like a little idea of what I'm talking about. More than half of the projects that were built, NFT projects in 2017, were Ponzi schemes. What that means was you bought an NFT, right? And the moment you purchased it, it immediately relisted it for sale for 100% more. Almost every project had that as a built-in feature. That was not a bug. That was a feature in 2017, right? That was the way everybody was thinking. This is a great, like, people are going to love this. Like, who wouldn't want to double their money immediately, right? Now we look at it as foolish. It's craziness. No, there's zero projects being launched today that have that as the buy-sell mechanism. Zero, right? We look at that as insanity. But in 2017, it was the standard of the day. You know? And that sort of thing, it's really given me this perspective. Like, wow, we think we're so right today. But I wonder what they're going to think of us in 5 years. Like, what are they going to think? Like, boy, those guys were idiots. What the heck were they doing? You know? But the funny thing is with your piece and being a one-off, in that way, it's genius. In that it's still, like, today, it completely clicks with today. Which is actually, like, you know, you might not have thought about it. You might not have planned it. But in a way, it's quite brilliant because it completely fits for today's model. Do you have any idea what you guys were asking for it back in 2014 or whatever it was?
I don't. I think it might have been. I was selling my work for like my video editions just for, I don't know. I think it was like 3,000 to 5,000, like. Yeah. Yeah, like, and you know, that was just kind of like, you know, it was, I sold a few here and there, like, and it did help, like, kind of keep things moving along. And then I had to like apply for grants to, you know, keep the lights on in the studio and do part-time work. And so, yeah, it's the numbers are different these days, and it's just like, yeah, so it's,
very
it's
different.
Funny to look back on, and but yeah, that was it. I can't even remember seeing in my emails, actually. I was looking for it, like the conversation about how much it was. I feel like maybe they were just gonna see if someone was interested and then like call me up
try to work out a deal. It's so awesome. Yeah. Man, it's so
well,
awesome.
We're still trying to do that, so we'll see. Yeah. Who calls. Yeah,
that's so cool. It's really 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 cool. What got you back into this idea of like, oh, maybe I should revisit? And like, was it just you heard about Ethereum and you heard that it was going to be more kind of artist friendly? What brought you back into the idea of like kind of the modern NFT? What brought you back?
I think it was that bigger idea. Like, if it was somehow just the art space, I think that's obviously still interesting. I love that idea that like artists now have a avenue to kind of monetize their work and create communities. And but I think what captured my imagination was the implications for the rest of society and all the other industries, and you know, how it's going to transform our lives. That that for me, I think, yeah, I'm now looking at creating new works. I'm working on a new project at the moment in this space, and I'm interested in reflecting on how the technology again relates to the landscape and our experience of the world. So that's the most interesting thing to me, to reflect on what it is as a technology and create a work about that, for it to be meaningful within that space. So, and for me to have kind of interest in putting the effort in. So that's what is interesting for me to make work in this space. And then on the other side, I'm just interested in everyone else, what they're doing now, because what's going to happen in the years ahead. I think it was just realizing that it had traction and it wasn't going away. And it took a few times, you know, dipping in and having a look and then processing it and speaking to my friend who's very into it. So yeah, it was a process to go through to kind of like fully get me ingrained. And, you know, and then there were conversations around their energy usage and those things that you have to work through. And, sure. But yeah, so like,
I mean, for me, yeah. I mean, if I'm, and I talk to, you know, artists all the time who are starting to enter into the blockchain space. And I say, I mean, at the core, like the core, like this is where they're buyers here, right? And I know most artists, they don't think that way. They don't think necessarily about buyers. Mm. They think about the art. But the reality is that there are people who think absolutely nothing about throwing down 5 or 10 ETH. You know, on an accomplished artist, you know, NFT. And so, you know, from that perspective, I think it's a super interesting time for artists. And my vision of what is possible, like when you talk about, you know, where you went and you were maybe supported financially to do work in a certain area or whatever. And I just think about that. And I think, you know, how few artists have that opportunity, right? To be supported by either a benefactor, right? In the olden days, I think about the benefactor model, right? And imagine in, I don't know, 1600, how many artists in the world were supported by benefactors, right? Mm. How many are supported today in that same way through communities? And I think we are at the base like step one of just a tremendous number of artists being able to be supported by kind of smaller micro communities. It doesn't take much. I mean, I know accomplished artists like yourself who say they only need 6 or 7 collectors, right? These are higher end artists kind of like yourself, but I look at like what I would call like an artist middle class where they can have 1,000 people who just love what they do in the NFT space or in the digital space, right? And they can support themselves just through that community of 1,000 or 500 or 100 people. And I think that I'm super just excited, but just because for me, it just allows people to do what they love. Like, and how many artists are stuck working for, you know, IBM, you know, making logos or whatever it is, right? And the ability for people to just do what they love. I don't know. For me, that just sounds amazing.
Yeah, I can't avoid that. I mean, that's definitely an attraction to this space for me as well, that, you know, it could be an opportunity for me to just get more time in the studio, get to kind of make things and, you know, actually build that community that I, you know, people have followed my work and, you know, that's great to kind of have people that have followed your work over the years. And, but I've never really offered them a way to, you know, there was Patreon and a lot of artists kind of like have got into Patreon and that works for them. And I'm not sure why. I never really like kind of warmed to the idea of that. And maybe I probably shouldn't have been single-sided, but, or closed off to it, but like, this is a much more kind of like expanded like possibility of community. And it's not, you know, the decentralized is like the key word, right? Like we're talking about these old systems of, there's so much hierarchy of like the money coming down from the top and you need to really kind of conform and fit into that system to actually succeed or to create work long term. So now it puts the, decentralizes things and communities can really spin up their whole spaces and ecosystems financially and community wise, and they can be so different now. And so I'm just so excited to see like where that goes, what these communities are. And like maybe that it splits into, you know, very different art worlds, like with each a different character. And maybe they're not like, maybe they've got interesting relationships and how they evolve. And maybe there's like trends that are just so small that like come and go. Or, you know.
Well, I think that's the beauty of the space is that artists can be creative and actually like do interesting things. Artists who I've tried to like, who've reached out to me to kind of get an understanding or trying to get a better understanding of community building and building up those kind of people who are going to support them. I try to tell them, look, you think of NFTs as a bridge to your collectors or a bridge to your fans, if you want to call them that. And what it is not you taking from the fan. What it is you giving to the fan. And what the NFT enables is when somebody acquires one of your NFTs, you know where that NFT lives, right? You know that wallet address, right? That wallet address becomes your connection point with that fan. So if you want to do airdrops, you can do that to those fans, right? And this is the way of building these kind of deep connection points with basically your benefactors that few artists are doing really, really well, but a couple are. And not only does it become a point where you can actually, it's the bridge with your fans, but it also becomes their access to you. And this area is just really just starting this kind of access point, NFTs as the access point or the kind of barrier for access, which I think is super exciting. And artists are only just beginning to get a hold, get their head around like how this can be used for the fans to access you. I just think it's super exciting the way this can actually work. And I've seen artists do it correctly, which is basically they almost give their stuff away at the start to basically create a wide base of fans. And then they begin layering rewards and all this sort of stuff on top to make those fans raving fans. And then when they do a more expensive drop, sells out immediately because they built this layer of basically, you know, I call them fans or collectors, whatever you want to call them, who are deeply connected to them, deeply. And it takes skill. That's not easy to do. It's, you know, a bit of mix of marketing and all this sort of stuff. But the people who can do it, you've seen it happen all across the NFT space. And if you can do it correctly, you can have, it can be fantastic.
Yeah, I think that side of it, I kind of recognize that it might be like in some ways a challenge, as I've never been like a really kind of public persona in terms of like pushing my work, and I kind of let my work kind of speak for itself in a way. And but I do recognize the upside of being more engaged and being more proactive with kind of getting things out there. So yeah, I need to find my angle. I don't think I can really like heavily market and be too kind of strategic to kind of go huge. I see that's maybe more relevant for other things, but like you said, artists are still working it out. So for me, I need to find like a nice balance there.
No, every artist is different. And it's like, I would never expect, you know, some artists, you know, talk about their stuff on Instagram. That's not most people. Right. It's like you have to find what works for you. And that's where I think, you know, just the creativity of artists can get really exciting. For me, like the whole NFT space, we're just in baby steps right now. And people are doing like what I just described to you about airdrops, or, you know, basically the NFTs acting as tickets or access points. Like these are just the baby steps of what I think artists are going to do in the future. And that's why I'm super excited about just the way they use them kind of going forward. Do you have any last words or you want to tell us about what you're up to next, and just to give the listeners a taste of what you're working on right now and going to be putting out soon?
Yeah. So I'm working on a series of, works, looking at landscape again. So it'll be, interconnected, NFTs that kind of create a landscape. Probably shouldn't go into too much detail. It's very much like still in the works, but, looking at the blockchain itself as a space that's very much kind of not visual, it's a bit distant to us in terms of its materiality. So it's kind of really trying to draw that out and kind of look at that visually as a work and explore it. So I think it, you know, I'm just putting a fair bit of time into it, thinking about it conceptually and aesthetically and trying to do something a bit different. So hopefully, you know, I think it's something quite new. I haven't been making as much work in the last couple of years, so just small bits here and there. I'm really excited to kind of dive really right back in and with this new focus. So I hope people find it interesting.
Nice. Sounds great, Joe. Joe, man, thanks so much for joining me today and taking the time with me, man. I really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, no, thanks. It's been great.